So welcome to today's podcast or webinar, whatever you want to call it. It goes out everywhere. And I'm joined for the second time by Mr. Jason Bernard. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. Thank you for having me back. It's great. Yeah. I love the sign behind you.
I'm just trying to get, I actually seen that on Facebook. It was a sponsored Facebook ad, and I'm like, I need that. I need something to break up the boring background. But yeah, no, it's good to have you back on for a second time. I think I've been on your podcast twice, so but it's good to get you back on this time to talk about some of the stuff that you're currently doing, which is your courses, and we're talking about the brand SERP. So I think over since we've, I think it was maybe a year ago or something we last had you on, and I think in that year a lot's probably changed for you. You've now done a hell of a lot of other stuff. You've done your year on the road doing the digital nomad stuff, probably found yourself a little bit as well, and you're now kind of seen as this brand SERP guy, you know, due to the number of talks, or the knowledge panel guy, or whatever the hell you want to call it. And that's obviously a great thing. I think we all have an identity in the world, you know, whether someone thinks I'm some crazy black hat guy or off their head Scottish guy, we all have a certain identity, if you like. And like, is the posh English boy that has a London agency, posh Scottish kiddie on English guy, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, and it was you who said to me, you were sitting on the beach in Tel Aviv, and you said, you know, it's all well and good, Jace, knowing about everything and being super knowledgeable about all the different elements of SEO, but you have to have a specialization. You pick one. And I actually had picked one, and I've been doing brand SERPs for 7 years now, but nobody was listening to me. Nobody was interested. Nobody thought it was important. And what was interesting in the last year is it's picked up. I've managed to get people on board with the idea. And when I say to people, Google is your new business card, that makes immense sense to people. They immediately think, right, okay, I talk to somebody, they look me up on Google. What appears on Google when they search my name is incredibly important to the opinion they will then have of me moving forward, either myself as a person or my brand or even my product for that matter. And so I've managed to specialize in that, get people on board, get people talking about it, and get these courses done, which was the other thing you told me, was find a way to monetize what it is you're doing. And that's the point, is I can't optimize everybody's brand SERP. There are too many. Brand SERPs are a niche because very few people talk about it, but they're essential to everybody. So they're the least niche in the entire world. So the idea of the course is to say, actually, optimizing and organizing your brand SERP is not difficult or complicated. If you know SEO, it's really simple, as long as you know what you need to do. And the course for somebody who knows SEO is going to tell you what you need to do it most efficiently and not waste time making the mistakes I made over the last 7 years. And if you don't know SEO, it will teach you simply to get into how you can actually adapt it. And it teaches you SEO along the way, which is something Dave Davis was saying to me. You know, I mean, it does a nice trick of helping you optimize your brand SERP, making yourself look good on your Google business card, but also teaching you SEO. Good, and as you said earlier on, common sense.
Common sense. But I think the reason that you probably have or have in the past where people don't talk about it as much is people end up doing SEO, or they start doing something, they start doing a bit of optimization for their sales, normally based around their services. Then they get lazy and they don't really think of the importance of the brand SERP. And you know, when people hear, oh, Jason's doing a brand SERP talk, they're probably like, really? You know, that, why? Like, why is he not focusing on, you know, long tail keywords, product specific stuff, and stuff like that? Because people have that you know, money mindset where they're going, fuck the brand SERP, you know, you know, let's go after the money keywords and stuff like that. However, I think it's a really important thing. You know, I've also been that guy where I've went, fucking hell, Jason. Well, not Jason specifically, but maybe I have, I don't know. But brand SERP, you know, that's a kind of fluffy, bullshitty kind of thing. It's like common sense for me. I'm like, everyone really should rank for the brand, but how serious is it? And it's not until, say, for example, someone writes something negative about you. And this is just one example of why you want to probably you know, go after your brand SERPs, and we'll go into other reasons. But, you know, someone writes an article about me, something they don't like, you know, in terms of what I've said, and, you know, add my name into it and try and optimize it for my brand, that could be damaging in a number of ways. And I've obviously got to set out, you know, I've not spent years and years and years of my time speaking on stage and everything trying to build a brand for some halfwit to try and damage it. So that's why it's really important that I grab all of that stuff. And that's something I've obviously been trying to do over the last year or so. And I think it's not, it wasn't just that instance where I thought I need to do it. It's just, you see everyone else doing it, and you've also got a bit of ego to it as well. You're like, oh, Jason Bernard's got the bloody knowledge panel. Why have I not got one? I need one. But I think, you know, from a real business point of view, it is really, really important, because people are becoming slyer. You know, people can make parasites on Medium or whatever and rank for your brand and steal an element of your traffic. There's loads of different little ways where people can hack your traffic, if you like, or cause problems for your reputation.
And that's the point. I mean, what you were talking about is it what I would call proactive online reputation management. If you've got control of every element on that first page and the second page, it's very difficult for somebody else to rank with one of those tricks to try and get in your face. I had a client as well whose competitor was ranking for their brand name. That got them really annoyed. It's incredibly annoying. And they hadn't controlled it proactively, and it was very difficult to get rid of that competitor because we had to build up the content around it to push that up. So if you can do it now before it becomes a problem, you've got a really big advantage. If it ever does become a problem, you can sort it out. You said you sorted yours out in a few weeks.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, though, it's taken me a good year to probably do it to some degree. I've not done everything. I've still not got the knowledge panel. Someone's working on that for me. But I think a lot of people think as well, this brand SERP thing is just quick and easy, bang, bang, bang. It's not, you know, can you give us a bit of insight as to, you know, if someone's starting out as a new brand, unknown, you know, it's one of those endless tasks, right? Surely after a year, you're going to own so much of the brand search. After two, if you continue to do that, you're going to own even more of that landscape. So there's not even it takes 6 months to dominate this. Would that be right?
Well, in fact, when you start working, there are some really quick wins. I mean, the first course, the fundamentals course, basically goes through the quick wins. Your social media channels, your own site, getting those rich site links up there to take up some of the SERP space. Those are nice quick wins that you can actually do in a few weeks. Some of them even a few hours. I mean, I've got one of the lessons actually shows you how to get the homepage to update within minutes and hour or even hours. So some of it is very quick, and you get that really nice feeling of a really good quick start. Then you have to learn to be patient, and you look at the rest of it. And as you said, you know, in 6 months you can start to feel that those non-controlled elements, where you don't control them directly, you're controlling them indirectly, and you can control an awful lot of content about yourself, even if it's indirectly. Or you get rid of the stuff you don't like, you push up other stuff you do like from page two onto page one, get rid of that stuff. And it doesn't have to be negative. You can get rid of stuff that just doesn't put you in the best light possible, and big yourself up, put all that great stuff on the SERP. And then, as you said, after a year, you're saying, yeah, now I've got hold of it. After 2 years, you're saying, now I've really got hold of it. And it's very, very difficult for somebody else to come and impinge on your brand SERP, as it were. And I've been doing it for 7 years, and I thought, you know, after 7 years, it's going to be done and dusted, but I'm actually still working on it. And we had a nice trick. It was really interesting with Andrea Volpini from Wordlift, where he has a program that writes a summary of what the SERP shows. So it will write you a summary and say, this is what I understand. It wrote a summary of myself that I didn't appreciate. Well, I thought it could have been better. No. He did that on the Friday. And then on Saturday morning, I sat down and said, what can I do to change that summary? And Saturday, Sunday, I worked on it. Tuesday, he reran the program, and the summary was completely different and exactly what I wanted. And he said, Jason Barnard is using Google as his own CMS, which was a really nice way of putting it. And so you get to the point where you can actually control in a couple of days what Google is showing about you. Pretty simply and easily, and it's a question of a couple of hours' work. Whereas, as you said, if you haven't started, it's a year before you can do that.
Yeah. I think people should probably start to implement this, you know, at the start of the online strategy. Or, you know, if not, obviously start implementing it now. But I think a lot of guys out there think simply by having their own website that that's them protecting their own brand, and that's just naive. You know, there's, you know, I've seen it with loads of people. I do a lot of online reputation management stuff as well, and someone pings a bad review on something like Glassdoor, or, you know, one of those websites, and boom, they're like, get that Glassdoor thing to fuck, you know, get rid of it. They, you know, how can they do this? And and obviously you've been doing online reputation management, and I think a few others do. Happens all the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, I tend not to get involved in the online reputation management business, just in the sense that I'm not here to solve people's bad press. I'm here to help them make themselves look great on the brand set, and also prevent that bad press from surfacing should it ever occur. So it's kind of proactive ORM rather than ORM. That said, you know, obviously, as you say, you know, sorting out people's reputational problems is, A, not just your brand SERP, it goes well beyond that. But on your brand SERP, if you've got control, it really isn't going to be a big problem for you. But moving on to the next, for me, the next reason why brand SERPs are incredibly interesting and people tend to forget is it's bottom of funnel and post funnel. So if I'm thinking about buying from Craig Campbell, I will search your name before purchasing from you. And what appears on that brand SERP affects what I think about you and whether I actually move forwards or not. And it's a question of being positive, accurate, and convincing. And that last one, obviously positive, accurate, we all want. But convincing is what you were talking about, the knowledge panel. If you've got a knowledge panel, wow, you're convincing. You look important. If you've got video boxes, you look important. If you've got image boxes, if you've got Twitter boxes, if you've got podcast boxes, all of these things I've had on my brand SERP at one time or another. And what then happens is people look me up and they think, oh, he really knows what he's talking about. Because the only things that rank for me are my site, Wikipedia, image boxes, video boxes, search engine journal, SEMrush, the knowledge panel, and I look like an expert. Which, of course, I am. But
even if you weren't, it's all about looking like one anyway. So that's the main goal for anyone out there is to shed yourself in the best possible light.
And then that bottom of funnel search, the person who's searching bottom of funnel then converts much more. I mean, my example is in my business, I've gone from converting 50% of people I talk to about my services to 80%.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody argues about my prices anymore. So basically my income has gone up by about 60, 70%. Simply because my brand SERP looks good, and before people actually sign on the dotted line, they search for me, they no longer argue, and they convert much better. And so that's a really simple example of how it can improve your bottom line, and it's well worth doing straight away. And the other thing is, I think people tend to forget, is existing customers navigate to your site by searching your brand name.
Mm-hmm.
And so your existing customers potentially see that brand SERP multiple times per day. Now, if there's something negative or your competitor on there, you might lose them. That puts the little grain of doubt in their mind. But if every time they only ever see great stuff, accurate, positive, and convincing about you, they're going to stay, or they're more likely to stay. That, and so you've got, for me, those two, bottom of funnel, post funnel, brilliantly, terribly, terribly valuable people searching your brand name. Oh, one more thing, sorry, before I pass back to you. The only person who searches your brand name are the people who matter to your business. Journalists, potential hires, clients, prospects, I'm trying to think of some partners, potential partners. All of these people, anybody searching a brand name matters to your business in one way or another.
So obviously, all of that's all good and well. And I want to go back to something you mentioned where you were saying you can get video boxes, you can get podcast boxes, you know, images. Now, when you're doing, you know, trying to actively grab the most amount of positions you possibly can for your brand, do you find, now, because I don't know the answer to this because I'm not a specialist, but do you find, like, say, for example, you've got the video boxes and the podcast boxes and you've got your big knowledge graph and all that stuff, do you find that if you maybe over-optimize something else that you're trying to get, it knocks off, like, the video boxes? Yep. Like, how much can you get? How much of that landscape can one greedy guy get?
That's a really interesting question. And it's actually very important. And the Rich Elements course actually talks about this. And the idea is to say, right, Google are not going to get rid of the blue links. The blue links are the foundation. There are always going to be 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 blue links. It's very difficult to get below 5. Some brands manage to do it, but that isn't the point. Google, what they're going to do is swap out these rich elements. They have a whole page algorithm that decides which elements finally get a place. So if you optimize video boxes, image boxes, podcasts, Twitter boxes, people also ask, I mean, that's too many. It can't put all of that on one page. So they have an algorithm that decides which of those is going to be most valuable to your audience.
Right.
And it will show that. So what I would say is, right, you want to start taking the space. The nice thing about these rich elements, which other people call SERP features, is that they take up, they often kill a blue link. So instead of having 10, you'll only have 9, so you've got less stuff to control. The other thing is they look great, they're impressive, and you control a great deal of the images and the videos and the tweets directly that appear for you. So it's controlled content, and that's incredibly important. But you start off with the images because they're easy to trigger.
Yep.
Then you can go for the videos, which require a video strategy. So you need to think about your video strategy. And that's the double bonus, is while you're sorting out your brand set by getting those video boxes, you're actually developing a great video strategy, and you're liable to rank elsewhere, get traffic on YouTube, build audiences on YouTube or on Twitter or on Facebook, which also rank very well for videos. So you're not only helping your brand set, but you're helping your overall marketing strategy. Twitter boxes. If you want the Twitter boxes, you have to have a great Twitter strategy. So if you get the Twitter boxes, you have immediately, you've already built that audience and built that interaction with your potential clients, your audience. So whilst in with your brand SERP, you're actually sorting out almost a great number of your digital marketing problems and sorting out your digital marketing ecosystem. And just the podcast was an interesting example. I managed to trigger those. And that killed my images, basically Google threw the images out because the podcast is more interesting than the images
to
my audience.
I can see that. I'm only kidding. But that was what I was going to ask you. Like, say, for example, I was doing this for Minds and I triggered the podcast and it got rid of my images. And I'm like, oh, bloody hell, I want my image back up there. Is it a case of trying to force more engagement back over to the image side of things, or how would you kind of manipulate that? Is it engagement? Is it something else?
Yep. Almost all of them are to do with engagement. In terms of Google, will measure the engagement it's getting on other platforms, which is an interesting concept. So it's an awful lot is off-site SEO. So you're doing SEO on YouTube, you're doing SEO on Twitter, on Facebook. You're boosting the signals that Google sees. You're basically trying to say to Google, this content is valuable and important to my users, and you can see that by the engagement I'm getting on these other platforms. Because Google will rarely rank multiple pages from your own site. So you have to do, beyond that first homepage and perhaps another few links, the site links underneath, maybe one or two links underneath sometimes. But you really need to get into your mind that you need these off-site optimizations going. A lot of it is off-site, and it's, once again, sorting out your digital marketing strategy, because it forces you to think about it. You won't get the image boxes with just images on your site. You need them on other sites too. And the question about the podcast is, in fact, images will tend not to come back as a rule because they're not incredibly valuable. But I managed to kill my podcast on my brand SERP as an experiment. And all I needed to do was move it to a new site. So I moved it off my jasonbarnard.com, moved it to CaliCube.pro, which is my company. And it killed it on my personal brand SERP. And now I'm trying to get it to trigger on my company brand SERP.
Mm-hmm.
So in fact, you can manipulate, you can cheat. And you just need to use, once again, what you said earlier on, common sense. If I take the podcast off my site, it suddenly isn't quite as associated with me. And that's fundamentally important to this whole thing. Google will rank things that are closely associated to you.
Yeah.
So I distance myself from my podcast by putting it on my company site. It disappears from mine. I haven't yet managed to trigger on the company site, but I will.
So here's a question. Now, if I've got a podcast and it's all listed on my own domain name, but I also have a podcast, like I do it through Podbean. So I've also got a secondary domain name where someone can go to like craigcampbellpodcast.com.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that in terms of trying to grab all of your brand stuff, you're better having everything combined on your own domain name rather than using, you know, Craig Campbell podcast and stuff like that. Google are not able to cleverly put them together, are they?
Well, you can have both, but the one thing, and that brings me on to the most important, single most important question about brand SERPs and brands and knowledge graphs and everything to do with this, and entity-based search, which you can explain in a moment, is that your site needs to be the principal and trusted source of information about you. Mm-hmm. And if that isn't the case, you will never build anything decent as a brand online through Google, as it were. But what that means is saying your podcast needs to reside on your site for Google to see that close connection, but it doesn't mean to say it can't reside elsewhere too. Mm-hmm. It just means that your site needs to be the principal source that Google trusts.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example about that trust, which was really interesting, was on my site. Obviously, my site is trusted for information about me, but I hadn't realized quite how much, because I did a test last year and I play the double bass. Google knows I play the double bass because I've been in bands and I've pushed that information to Google. And I actually posted an article that said Jason Barnard plays the ukulele. And I got Google to show a feature snippet saying, what instrument does Jason Barnard play? And it said ukulele, because I told it I played the ukulele. And then I took ukulele off and replaced it with double bass, switched back to double bass. So we have this thing, and that was in literally 5 minutes. I mean, within 5 minutes, I had the feature snippet showing. That's an incredibly interesting insight into how much you can control what Google shows about you on all sorts of queries around your brand by being the trusted source that Google basically believes me off the bat, whatever I say to it. And the other thing was for my group, the Barking Dogs, there was a confusion. And I convinced Google that my site was the official site for the Barking Dogs and claimed the knowledge panel. So I now control the knowledge panel for the Barking Dogs, and I can control much of the brand search for them. And now I'm pushing, I've made some cartoons with in the noughties with blue dogs and yellow koalas, and I'm pushing that into the knowledge graph, and I'm doing that through my site, and Google will now believe anything I tell it about mm-hmm. those characters on my site, because it's understood that those characters, they don't belong to me, but I created them, so I have a very close relationship. And yeah. So we have the whole thing is common sense. I keep coming back to that. What do I have a close relationship with? How can I convince Google or indicate that close relationship so that when I feed information through my site to Google about this entity, product, characters from cartoons, music groups, my job, my courses, one of my podcasts, as you were saying earlier on, that when I do feed that information to Google, it believes me off the bat. It believes my good word. And that's trust. Google has to trust you, and that takes years.
Yeah. Obviously, that's the thing. You know, I've seen you, you know, over the last few years, you know, speaking, doing webinars, building up trust and authority within your own industry. And again, that's something that, you know, how much money can you put on that? That you know, by the time you calculated it all, it's a shit ton of money. But one other thing that you know, is often said, and it's a word that I've heard you say many times, and I just get the feeling that people who don't fully understand what we do will be like, what the fucking hell is he talking about? So the word entities, when it comes to you know, what you're doing here, can you give us a bit of a background and some examples of good entities that you know we want to be on, basically?
Yeah, well, I think entities is actually quite a large term. I mean, if we have an entity which is Jason Barnard, a thing, it can be a person, a brand, a place, a road, doesn't matter, a thing, a chair. Jason Barnard is an entity, Craig Campbell is an entity. And what Google tries to understand is this Craig Campbell and this specific Jason Barnard, there are 250 Jason Barnards and about 2,000 million Craig Campbells in the world. And it's trying to identify which one we're talking about. So if we say Craig Campbell knows Jason Barnard, we have two entities, named entities, that's me and you, and a relationship which is knows. If we take my sister, Clio Barnard, she's a film director. Clio Barnard is the sister of Jason Barnard. And that's really simple. Two entities, my sister and me with a relationship, which is sibling.
Yeah.
So that's what entities are all about. But it actually goes beyond that. Because we can say Craig Campbell entity talks to relationship, Jason Barnard entity about brand SERPs entity. Brand SERPs is a concept and yet it's an entity. So you need to think about it. What is a thing? It's a person, a place, a company, a brand, a product, a building, but also a concept like price, like brand SERP, like philosophy, like SEO is an entity too. And what we're trying to do is say to Google, Jason Barnard has a relationship with SEO. Jason Barnard has a relationship with Craig Campbell. Jason Barnard has a relationship with Jason Barnard's podcast. And that whole thing you were talking about with going around the world, talking to people, building relationships. One is there is no shortcut. There isn't a shortcut to building these relationships. You have to have them in order to be able to indicate them to Google. You're not going to get very far cheating on that. So you need to actually build the relationships, create the relationships, and then indicate them. And importantly, the relationships need the closer, the stronger, and the longer, the better. Mm-hmm. So an example of the closest, strongest, longest relationship is, for example, my mother. That's close, that's strong, and it's forever. Jason Barnard made a TV series. That's close because I made it. That's long lasting because it will never change. I will always be the person who created that. Mm-hmm. And it's very strong. When we're communicating with Google about entities, we're looking to communicate entities with relationships, things with relationships, and making sure that Google understands how close, how strong, and how long they are. And an example about long is I was the boss of a company in France from 1991 to 1996. It's important that Google understands that that relationship is now over.
Yeah.
Because I've replaced it with a new one with my new company. And if you search for Jason Barnard professions or Jason Barnard jobs, you'll see it has 6 or 7 jobs listed. And that's important that Google understands, A, I have multiple relationships with multiple jobs, but also that some of those jobs are now over. Mm-hmm. So you have the concept of relationships and time, which makes it really complicated.
Yeah. No, it's a complicated thing, which brings me nicely on to the next part. You know, where, and I know you I don't want to for you to unravel too much because obviously you've got a lot of stuff in your course and you know, stuff like that, but where can you even give us like the top 2 places or the top or an example of a place where Google would pull that data from? So say I'm now owner of CaliCube, for example. I bought that from Jason Barnard. What one place would you reckon, because I know there's a number of them, but is there one place that you reckon I could go so that I can tell Google this has happened and give them that story? You know, where would I do that?
Right. Well, there are actually 2 answers to that question. Once you've been working on it for as long as I have, let's say anything over 3 years, and you've convinced Google that your site is the principal and trusted source of information about yourself, your site is the place to put it. Your site needs to be the place where you place information and then you push it out to other sources. The one place that Google is currently looking that will tend to work is Wikidata. Mm-hmm. But Wikidata on its own will never do it either. You can't just rely on one source, because what Google is looking for is multiple corroborations from trusted, independent sources that this piece of information is true. Mm-hmm. Because when it's looking at entities and relationships, it's looking at facts. It's not saying, I think this is true. It's saying, I know this is true. So it's really sticking its neck out. If you think about the knowledge panels on the right, compared to the featured snippets, the featured snippet is, this is what I think is the best answer I have found online. Mm-hmm. It's the answer I recommend. Whereas the knowledge panel is, this is fact.
Yeah.
And the fact that I'm citing a site, it doesn't have to be Wikipedia. People tend to think it's only Wikipedia that's cited in knowledge panels. That's not true. I've got 1,600, probably almost 2,000 now, different sources that are cited in knowledge panels. And Google is saying, this is fact. And this site, this source, this site that I'm citing is trusted. So you end up with a situation where my go-to place is Wikidata. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean to say just Wikidata will do. So obviously you have to do the course or listen to me for a lot longer to learn all the other ones. I mean, I'll tell you another. Crunchbase is another great place.
Yeah.
But what it truly comes down to, and I'd like to kind of end this particular comment on that, is my site is the place I place all this information. Everything else is just corroboration.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And one final thing I want to ask you, then I'm going to ask you a couple of things about the course itself. You know, it's obviously seems like a lot of hard work doing all this, and I'm sure it is a lot of hard work doing it, you know, sorting all of this kind of stuff out. But when you say go to places like Wikidata and stuff like that, is there a service or a tool where I can go in and say, Craig Campbell, you know, has featured in a film or something, and it puts it out to a whole bunch of different, you know, websites? Is there such a thing, or is that something you would totally advise against?
If there isn't anybody who's doing that right now, if somebody did start doing it and they did it properly, then I would say that's a very good thing, because it saves a lot of time. Basically, none of this is complicated. Absolutely none of what I do is complicated. It's all good common sense, as we said. It just takes time, and you need to be really careful. I mean, the problem with any kind of automated service is always going to be closing the loops. And it's loops that we see as humans that machines don't necessarily see. And if there was ever a case where you're saying Google is so much more intelligent than all these other machines that are trying to trick or manipulate Google, it's so much more intelligent that another machine won't see the loops that Google sees. And one example of that, and it was an interesting example, is I created a knowledge panel for my daughter, for my wife, for 9 characters from the cartoon series, for my group. And I made one mistake, and it was my ex-wife. I didn't close all the loops, and Google ended up creating a second knowledge panel for her instead of integrating the information I was giving into the one I had already created. So mm-hmm. we ended up with 2 Veronique Barnards, one of whom was a musical artist, the other of whom was the mother of Leonor Jo Barnard, who's my daughter. So when I created this knowledge panel for my daughter, it thought, okay, this is a new Veronique Barnard that I didn't know before. So we had 2 of them. And somebody was asking on Twitter, how do you merge 2 knowledge graph entities?
Mm-hmm.
And I basically said, I don't know, but I'm about to find out. And it took me 3 weeks to merge these two, that mistake, to correct the mistake I made. And what is interesting here is people think the knowledge graph is very slow to react, but it isn't. I can create a knowledge panel or a sprout, as I call them, the beginnings of a knowledge panel, or correct one in a few weeks, mm-hmm. simply by correcting the information, closing all the loops, making sure that all the information corresponds, and making sure that that fundamentally important base site source of information about this entity is updated correctly.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. Now, one last thing. I know I said that before. I've got a quick thing to ask you, and it's just more of a personal thing. Now, a lot of this stuff, you said people think it's all about Wikipedia. Which I know it's not. There's a lot more to it. Google's not that dumb. However, a Wikipedia page is important, right? I would say. Now, here is a situation or a scenario. So 2 or 3 years ago, I put up a post on Upwork asking if I could get a Wikipedia page made for myself. Mm. So that's fine. People came back with all different prices, said, there's not enough, you know, PR about you, you know, come back in a few months or whatever, which was fine. Now, I met a friend about a year ago, and he's like, I've been a Wikipedia editor for the last 12 years. I'm trusted. I can do this. I can do that. I can sort you out with a Wikipedia page. So I'm like, go for it. So he puts up this Wikipedia page, took months to do it, and someone in the community said to him, dude, like, is this Wikipedia page about commercial activity? And he said, no, it's not. It's not. It's definitely not. Because it wasn't. It was more for me to just have a Wikipedia page and stuff. And so he said no. And eventually, when it was about to go live, they actually came to him and said, listen, mate, this is about commercial activity. And they pulled up that old Upwork ad that I had out there. So obviously, someone is checking crazy things in the background. Now, my friend actually said to me, you will never get a Wikipedia page now because I've done that. Is that the case?
But well, there are two things here. One of which is you're now marked for life. That's I mean, the thing about Wikipedia is none of this ever goes away. Whatever you do, it's always going to be there. So you're marked for life, and they do check very, very carefully. I mean, there's an awful lot of checks. I mean, I'm basically the rules for Wikipedia are you need to be notable. And that means being a musician, writing a book, changing your industry, being in a film. And I've been in films, I've written books. Oh, no, I haven't written books, so I'm telling a complete lie. I was getting overexcited. I've been in a band, I've made records. All of these things make me notable, and yet my Wikipedia page still has warnings on it. And that's because they're very, very nervous about all of this, and you need to be able to prove that you're notable. And there is an interesting distinction. It's notable in a human sense. Now, what does that mean? It means that people will spontaneously look you up because they're interested in where you come from and what you've done. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to insult you, but that's unlikely for you. You don't have fans. You don't have, or you do have fans, but not in the sense, sorry, not in the sense of a film star or a music star or somebody who's written a book. So
what if I was to tell you that I have 3 books that are published and I have been in a film?
Oh, right, yeah. In that case, you maybe should have approached it from that point of view. But they were published...
Which the Wikipedia was basically just about SEO.
Right. Well, that's it. Well, I can't tell you exactly what the circumstances were there, but if you've published a book that's been pushed out into shops, physical books, it's not a Kindle version of a self-published book. It's physical books, yeah. Physical albums. They become noteworthy in a Wikipedia sense. But I think it's really important to take a couple of steps back and say, Wikipedia is an encyclopedia for humans. It needs to contain information that humans find interesting and helpful. The knowledge graph, which is Google's version of Wikipedia, which is a machine-readable, machine-usable encyclopedia, doesn't have that distinction. It doesn't care if you're notable or not. It just wants to understand who you are and what you do. And that's phenomenally important. What we're doing is feeding into Google's knowledge graph who we are and what we do. And that's what's going to drive SEO from today onwards.
Yeah.
So Google, I mean, there's a guy called Reed Brewster who's managed to create himself a place in the knowledge graph and a brilliant knowledge panel. He's a British gamer. No offense to him, but, you know, not famous in any meaningful manner. But he's managed to create this knowledge panel simply by placing the information in the right places and doing it systematically and methodically over a period of time. It took him 6 months. And that's very important. Google doesn't care that he's not famous. Mm-hmm. It just wants to understand who he is.
Yeah.
And what he does. And I think that's the fundamentally important thing is maybe if people are looking to get in the knowledge graph or get a knowledge panel, forget Wikipedia unless you are notable in a human sense. Like, and work on the other areas. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, like something like Brad Pitt, Hollywood star,
yeah,
something like that, rather than us saturating it for our own SEO egos.
Well, and that is part of the problem. The SEO community started creating lots of Wikipedia pages and Wikidata entries, and some people and some of the editors at Wikipedia and Wikidata have taken it very personally and are now removing them out of pure spite, as far as I can tell. Somebody like Eric Enge, who's important to our industry, Barry Schwartz, important to our industry. The fact that these editors are removing or commenting or changing their entries is unfair in the sense that SEO is an industry, it's a recognized industry, it's an important industry, and we have to have representative experts. It doesn't have to be you, it doesn't have to be me, but it has to be somebody. And I would love for the Wikipedia and Wikidata people to come around and actually sit down and say, can we make a list of them? And it doesn't, for me, really matter who it is, but just removing that spite is a real big pity. And having just done this, I'll probably get mine removed out of spite. But in terms of my Wikipedia and Wikidata pages, I'm notable. I mean, there isn't a debate about it. And yet I get the warning, and that's kind of frustrating. But the good news is that a year ago, Google was as stupid as you suggested it was earlier on by relying almost entirely on Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. Now it's tending to rely on Wikidata, but that's changing very, very fast. So by the time, let's say in a year's time, there will be a lot of other sources that are truly trusted, and we will be able to push this information. Google cannot afford to rely on Wikipedia and Wikidata forever.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Now, that was the final question about that type of stuff. I do want to run a few questions past you in terms of your course. Yeah. So all of this good stuff and all this important stuff is really, really is important for any business. Now, you've got your courses, which have been split up, which I think is a great idea, into five different options, or you can buy them all, you know, for 600 euros. You can buy the full works. But for example, if I wanted to, you know, be more focused on knowledge panels, you have your managing knowledge panel section there, or you've got your optimizing personal brand SERPs or whatever. So if someone's doing one of your courses and they want to do one of these, what is the course like? Is it over the shoulder tutorials? Do you basically give them a list of go and post here, 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 and here? Yeah. What is it like? It's not, yeah, because I know you mentioned earlier, which I think is probably quite important for us to emphasize is, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, you recorded it first and then you looked at it and watched it and went, this is full of fucking fluff. And then you say you went away, restructured it, and now it's meant to be full of information. And that's what we want from a course, and that's a point I want to hit home. It's not a course where Jason's talking a whole load of shit and going round about the houses to tell you about one minute little detail, because we've all seen courses like that. This course is, here's what you need to do, go away and do it. Is that right?
Yeah, I recorded the whole thing and realized it was full of fluff. And then I just did the transcript and rewrote the whole thing. I scripted the whole thing. So it's actually very, very compact. I took out anything that wasn't useful. And I've had a few people doing the course, even experienced SEOs, who say, you know, I go through and I have to keep stopping the video so I can take in everything that's going on. And each course contains anything from 2 to 3 hours of video. But the idea of having a to-do list, there are some things that everybody can do. For example, updating the meta title on the homepage, that's the most obvious thing. So obviously I explain that in detail. But then the specifics for each case are always going to be different. So what I'm teaching is, what's the approach that will allow you to understand what you need to do for your specific situation? Mm-hmm. And then I give resources underneath to explain the details. For example, exactly how to write schema markup, there's no point in me explaining that in a course. What I can do is say, you need schema markup. This is the one you need to focus on. This is what it's going to do. This is where it's feeding into. Look in the resources below. There's a link to explain exactly how to write it, or a link in this case to a tool on calicube.pro, which is my site, that allows you to create the schema markup automatically. So the idea is to say, the videos themselves, which are me recorded speaking like this in this beautiful red shirt, with a slide deck behind me so that I can show information that supports what I'm saying and helps with understanding and helps digest all this information, because it is a lot of information very fast. But it's information that is good sense, common sense, and great marketing, great digital marketing, and very, very, very solid SEO. So basically, whatever happens when you're doing this course, you will learn solid SEO, great digital marketing, great marketing, and lots of common good sense about your brand. And you will start to build your brand from the brand SERP up. And I think for me, that's what's come out of doing these courses, is I'm realizing that I now no longer approach SEO from a page and keyword level, as you were saying earlier on. I say, what is my brand? Who am I? What do I do? What do I offer? And why am I such a great solution for Google's users? And I need to build that from the brand SERP out.
And that's a job in itself, right? if you really wanted to go all out attack, you probably could have a person dedicated to brand SERP and a person dedicated to products or services.
Yes. Exactly, because as you rightly say, a product SERP is a type of brand SERP. Mm-hmm. Somebody will search for a product, and it's the same thing. You need to control it. You need to make it perfect. And if you build those, if you build the perfect product SERP, then your product will probably rank for all those great keywords, the generic keywords outside of it, because you've created such a great ecosystem, digital ecosystem around it. And Google will understand, A, what it is, B, what it does, C, where it will serve its users, and D, that your audience engages with you and with it, and that your product is important and interesting for its users.
Cool. So, no, as I say, the point I wanted to get across was your course is more of a visual course. It's not some 13-page PDF. No. You buy a course and you get that, and you're like, fuck. There's a lot of time and effort being put into it. He has got his red shirt on. You can get the course on courses.calicube.pro/courses. And as I say, you can get the five-course bundle for €600, or you can take your pick on any of the specifics that you may need information on.
I mean, taking the pick thing, sorry, I agree with you. It was a great idea. It wasn't my idea initially. It was actually Nils de Moer from WooRank, who was talking to me about it, and we came up with the idea together. But that idea of saying, I just need the fundamentals, I need to get started, you just buy that, you get started, you see how it goes. Then you think, oh, I want the video boxes. You buy the Rich Elements course, and then you learn to trigger video boxes, Twitter boxes, podcast boxes, image boxes. If you've got a problem, you only need the getting rid of negative content course. You want a knowledge panel, you only need that one, the knowledge panel one. And then personal brand SERPs. Obviously, as a person, I don't need a lot of the stuff that's going to be in the business-oriented ones. I just want stuff about people. And people have the problem of ambiguous names like Craig Campbell or Jason Barnard. That's a very specific problem that a lot of brands don't have.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you pick and choose because each of us has different needs. And I think that's I think I made a smart decision to do it that way, because it makes the entry much cheaper. It's only about €100 to get into the fundamentals course, and allows people just to buy the bits they need.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I think for what I can say, it's definitely the right decision. but anything else we can add here, Jason? Is there anything else you want to share about your course that I've maybe not asked? That
I would say, actually, sorry. I mean, I'm incredibly enthusiastic. I mean, you know me really well, Craig. And anybody who's seen me on any shows or webinars or in conferences, I'm like this all the time. I can't help it. This is who I am. And the course is like this. Is what it really is, trying to communicate to people how they can help themselves with their brand SERPs and make that brand SERP really, really sexy and convincing. And the other thing is, I'm really proud of this course. I would take it. I would pay for my own course from what I learned just from researching it. Because every time I'm about to say something, and that was the rewriting thing that I learned, is as I rewrote it, I thought, do I know this or do I just think it? And if I thought I only think it, I don't actually know it, I set out to prove it, to figure it out. And then when I did say it, I knew it. It wasn't just something I thought or imagined or, you know, it's everything in here is stuff I've tested. It's all stuff I've done. None of it in there is something I haven't done.
Yeah. And that's important, I think.
Yeah.
To prove what you've done and not just say because someone else said it.
Yeah.
Which is what a lot of people do in this industry. You know, they go, oh, yeah, it sounds quite good. I'll just throw that into my next talk. Whether it works or not is irrelevant. But that's nice to know that, you know, a lot of time, hard work, research, and dedication has went into it. And if anyone out there is interested in learning more about that, I would highly recommend using Jason's course. As Jason says, we have met loads of times and all over the world. Genuine, honest, trustworthy guy, speaks at events all over the place. So, as I say, it's something that I think a lot of people are missing out on. You know, and I've been missing out on it as well, Jason. I'm not going to lie. It's something I'm starting to implement now. I've been in this industry 18 years, and it's only probably in the last 18 months I've really started to switch on and go, right, this is actually important.
I initially thought 7 years ago when I started working on it, this is something I'll do for a few months and I'll get bored or it won't be important, or I'll run out of things to do. And 7 years later, I'm still learning every day. Every time I open up, I've got a database of 75,000 brands and people that I'm tracking. And I'm tracking the brand SERPs, so I've got a database of tens of millions of lines of brand SERPs that I can look into. So if somebody says to me, like, in this industry, what elements tend to appear, I can tell you. And I can tell you from data, I can tell you from my collection of brand SERPs. And if somebody asks me a specific question about a brand SERP, I can find the information somewhere in that 75,000 brands, which is also kind of in the course. I'm using this data for the course. So it's things I've done, things I've achieved, successes I've had, failures I've had as well, which is important too, to remember that when I get it wrong, it teaches me that I can, what I need to tell you so you don't get it wrong.
Yeah.
And backed up with data, backed up with fact checking, and backed up with me actually doing it.
Nah, it's all sounds very, very good. And as I say, get your fingers out, guys, if you're not doing it already. start doing it, take it seriously, because I think, you know, as we go on, it's going to become more and more important to dominate those positions. Yep. But Jason, I want to thank you for your time again, and great insights. And obviously, it's always good to catch up anyway, because I've not seen you for, I think Vegas might have been the last time I saw you.
We've seen each other 8 or 9 months, yeah.
Every other month somewhere.
That's true.
But obviously with lockdown and stuff, it's not been a great year in terms of traveling, but
no, it's not been very. I mean, my digital nomad days came to a very sudden and abrupt end.
Yeah, but fingers crossed, it's near the end, and we can get back out and get back to conferences and sharing a beer.
I'm looking forward to bumping into you again at some conference somewhere around the world. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, no, I'm sure we will. But thank you very much again for being on today.
Thank you very much for having me. That was amazing. And that was really, really good fun.
No worries.